Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of our podcast here. We are thrilled to have Joy Hawkins from Sterling Sky, one of my favorite people in local search, and great to have you here, Joy.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
So I've been a big fan of yours even before you had your current company. Tell our listeners here a little bit about you and your journey to becoming the sort of one of the rock stars of local search.
Yeah, so I started way back in 2006, actually selling PPC ads at a, if you want to call them, a marketing agency, and then just kind of self-taught myself SEO, and that morphed into local SEO. And I worked at a few different agencies for I think a total of about 11 years. And then decided to start my own company called Sterling Sky back in 2017.
You know, the world of local has changed so much over the years. But for people who are sort of tuning in now, you know, we've had the sort of tumultuous LSA added to the world. We have PPC expanding, and that local, or let's say the map pack, has become so incredibly important because the odds of people getting down to organic, a lot of searches just keeps getting less and less. What are your sort of right now, your sort of state of local search? What are sort of the things that you think people should be most focused on when they're sort of trying to put that package together for their firms?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say look, the jury's out on local service ads, like how much they're going to perform well. So far, it looks like, you know, that the cost per lead is really high compared to other verticals that we've seen. So I think Google is definitely charging a premium for those in the legal field. When it comes to like how much traffic those are going to steal from Google My Business, they are going to steal some traffic. So I think it's kind of good to have realistic expectations. We've seen this with other industries you work in. When local service ads are rolled out, we do see a bit of a dip in how much activity comes from Google My Business because Google has done a very good job of making them not look like ads. So I would say, you know, something to be aware of. And I would suggest, you know, going through the headache of getting into local services and seeing how well it performs. We're seeing a pretty drastic difference in the cost per lead depending on what type of law you're in. For your comment about like Google My Business replacing organic or stealing traffic from organic, I would agree. Like we're seeing more and more traffic coming from Google My Business. That being said, there are a lot of queries that still don't even generate a local pack. So if that's the case, obviously organic is the way to go. And we see a good amount of that for, you know, state terms, like people Googling certain laws in different states and things like that. So there's lots of opportunity all over.
You know, for a long time, we always talked about reviews being a conversion factor. And there was a post, I don't know if it was your post or one of the, or Ron's post, was talking about the fact that Google has now slipped in that reviews are actually a factor for three-pack visibility. Can you speak a little bit to that change? And is that something that was already there and they're just formally announcing it? You know, how does that play?
Yeah, so definitely always been there. Like reviews have always been a ranking factor, but they are one that are, I would say, has diminishing returns. So we see, you know, when businesses get a certain number of reviews, there is, you know, a difference. But I would say like if you jump from, I don't know, let's say 10 reviews to 100 reviews, you might see a difference. But if you jump from 100 to 200, you might not. So something to keep in mind. We've seen that same thing true with other ranking factors. But I have a study that I did do on it a couple of years ago where there was a day where Google got rid of millions of reviews. So they got rid of anything that was anonymous. That was kind of one of those transitions.
Remember that well.
Yeah. And so when they got rid of them, we actually closely watched a few businesses that lost a lot of reviews because of that. And just to see what happened with the ranking over a few days, like directly after this happened. And a few of them that did lose a ton of reviews had a drop, like a day or two after the loss of the review. So I would say that review volume is a ranking signal as well as likely the text in reviews. But I would say that's always been the case, not like just now.
You know, going back to that New York Times article years ago about the eyeglass store, I always got the impression that Google was not, that the number itself, they were very cautious because they didn't want to see that gamed. And that's something finally, I think they sort of threw their hands up and said, you know what, we can't not use this because, you know, if somebody has no reviews, that it seems that they've in recent months that has twisted. Now, again, they're also putting additional touch points as a criminal defense firm, at least partially. The fact that anonymous reviews were knocked out then was heartbreaking because you really don't want your clients disclosing who they are. That's why they come to you is for confidentiality. But I digress. One of the things that a bunch of stuff, so many things I want to talk to you about, but there was discussion of sort of gateway pages back, has, you know, the idea of people sort of sifting through review wise. Have you seen there was sort of pretty strong language about not doing it with big threats if people did? Have you seen any of that carried out, or was that sort of just people got the message and didn't push that?
So recently, no, I haven't seen them do anything about review gating. When it first came out that review gating wasn't allowed and they updated the guidelines, there was a major review company that got hit quite hard by it. And since then, I've literally never heard one of those stories.
Right.
So I still advise people not to do it. But as far as enforcing that policy, Google is horrendous at finding fake reviews, like, or any reviews that violate their guidelines. Like, it's, you know, they've got light years to go to figure out how to do that.
Well, that dovetails to my next question, which is the $1 million question, right? Google's a gazillion-dollar company. They're really, really smart. How does spam still show up in the three pack? And why is there, you know, look, you have as much insight into what's going on there. Do they not care? Do they want to keep people out because it sells more ads? Are they working towards it? What's going on here?
So it's a resource problem, in my opinion. Google My Business is not a moneymaker for Google the way that ads are. So, you know, the team's limited. And whenever you have that, you have limited resources. And I don't think that Google has devoted the amount of time and effort that it needs to make that product as good as it should be. So the spammers are just, I mean, they're always like three or four steps ahead of Google. Google comes out with something to try and stop them, but they've already figured out the newest and best way to create fake listings. So,
but you know, the part that bothers me is I get that, but that I don't feel like Google has taken the basic. If they said, hey, you need three reviews to be in a competitive market shown, but on any given day, you'll see two spam listings just pop in. Now, they don't stay long, but the idea that there's not some sort of filter, you know, it takes so much to get yourself. They have, you know, for legitimate websites, they're so, or Google My Business, it's so hard to get stuck there. You know, it's, we hear resources and I buy that, but you would think that there are basic fundamental things that if they wanted to stop this, they could. It just seems that it's too tempting right now. The spammers don't have to work that hard to persevere.
Yeah. And if Google changed the ranking algorithm, that would solve this. I think one of the disconnects is there's all these teams at Google and I don't know what team is responsible for the algorithm, but it's not the team that takes all the support calls and like calls from businesses. And I feel like they're disconnected from what's going on in the real world. That's my opinion. But I think the main thing that they need to solve for spam to become less of a problem is the business name not being such a ranking factor. Because if these listings didn't rank, they wouldn't have as much incentive to create them. So I think the algorithm is just flawed. And they have a hard time understanding what's a real business and what's not a real business. And I think they need to change some signals around to make it so that these new listings don't rank.
You know, it's funny. I'll bring an analogy. A number of years ago, if you remember, but they made a proclamation that exact match URLs were not going to be rewarded. And overnight, because I have a bunch of them there, and I was too cheap to buy the actual ones, so I always had hyphens in them. But for some of my law firms, they would, they fell and then said, oh, well, it's not necessarily because if it's an exact match, it still could be good, but it shouldn't be because it's an exact match. So if you have an exact match with one page of content, that's not your best answer. I just wish that there's so many other ranking factors they could use that to use name. We're in 2020, that we should be beyond that. What do you say to people? Because getting through and fighting this, it feels like you're fighting the ocean sometimes. You know, you can get a couple gone, but you know, we see stuff all the time that's, it's so clear. They don't have the resources. They're not automating it. Do you keep fighting it, or what's your advice to people?
And you have to keep fighting it. If you don't, you're just going to get suffocated. There's no real option there. I mean, we've done as much as we can to try and raise awareness about the issue. So I think there's a good amount of awareness out there, like in the press and, you know, on social media and stuff. But if you do nothing, then basically you're going to have all these lead gen listings that are pushing you out. So it is frustrating, and it's frustrating as an SEO company too, because if I have, you know, 10 new lead gen listings that are pushing my client out of the three pack, I can report that person, but I'm not actually gaining anything for my client. I'm technically just keeping them where they're at, which can be hard. So it's kind of like one of those things that has to be pitched as like, listen, if we weren't to do this, then you would actually see a drop. So we're really trying to maintain the presence that you've got. So setting realistic expectations is important.
And it's also, I know I'll give you the other heartbreaking areas. Let's say that you're sixth. So even if you removed a spam listing, it's not like you're back. So now you're sort of doing work that's not even going to pay immediate dividends. And that becomes, again, I digress. Let me, on these, this is something that both hits legitimate lawyers as well as spam lawyers, Regis offices, hot topic. So some people, and this literally came on the Max Law listserv today, somebody has their one and only legitimate office at a Regis. You know, for people geek out on this like you and me, we'd be like, hey, never go there in the first place. You're there. Is this something where if it's your primary office, not a hyper-competitive market, you'll probably be okay till some point where you get prominent enough? Or is, you know, where are you seeing, we've seen a number of things where Google has wiped out these pieces. It's not 100%. There are people with seven Regises that we've been, you know, telling them about for years and they don't care. You know, what's your take on where we are with the satellite office issue?
So the thing is, some Regis spaces have actual staffed offices. Like, you can rent an office from Regis at location and have an actual office there that Absolutely. You work out of. So that's totally fine. But I would say it's like, how is Google going to know if you're using the virtual service, or like, that's the tricky part. So if you are actually renting a space in an office, like, just making sure that you have proper photos on your GMB listing that clearly show like, hey, we're here. And we're here all the time. And, you know, it's a little more believable too if you aren't claiming to have five staffed offices at Regis locations.
Right. Well, right. So like, have you seen those 360 tours? So let's say you're at a shared office space, Regis or otherwise, and you pay the $300-$400 and somebody comes through and takes those photos. Is there anything like that you've seen? Obviously, that's intuitively it would be, but are there any sort of touch points that people should use if they do actually have an office there?
Yeah, a 360 tour is great. Get one of those done, few hundred dollars. And that will really help to prove that you actually have an office there. But again, like, the problem here is people, they take this and then they kind of twist it, right? So then they'll be like, oh, I'm just gonna get 360 tours and stage an office. And there are ways for Google to tell, you know, who's telling the truth and who's not. So,
well, that part's actually pretty tough, because how do you know if it's a per hour contract or if it's actually, mm-hmm. you know, you bring your stuff for the day. So we see, and most things, what I tell people is just being very careful that you're not abusive. If you have one place, you're going to get it back up. Google's not trying to harm you, but if you have seven Regises and they're all at Regises, using that as just sort of the largest name out there, that they're going to eventually get to you, whether it's today or 6 months from now.
Yeah, honestly, my suggestion would be to people that don't have like a physical office that they rent, I would use your home address and hide it. Like, the term for it is called a service area business, but Google has a clear your address field in the Google My Business dashboard. So you can click on clear your address is gone, nobody's gonna like show up at your house. So that's the option I would go with if you're an attorney that works from home.
And then you could always, on the website itself, use like the mailing address, so that it's not like you, because part of it is there's the pull and tug. You need the courts or whoever to be able to find you.
Sure.
That's really, really great advice. I think, and you know, again, if you're playing hardcore SEO, you shouldn't be there in the first place. You know, if you're sitting there saying you're starting out, you can always move. So one of the good things, we talked about a lot of bad things Google's doing. One of the good things seems to be that when I started out with my law firm and I switched offices, because when you're starting a business, you very often make jumps as you're trying to figure out the size and getting deals and getting sublets, you're bouncing around for the early years, that it used to be almost impossible to move an office. And I talked to Mike Blumenthal back in the day, you know, we there were strategy sessions. What do you do to move an office? Should you just get a lease at the old place so that you could get your mail there? You know, that seems to be one of the things you could check a box and say, at this point, what is your take on the risk when somebody moves office to office of their GMB?
Yeah, like no risk. I mean, so I take that back. There is some risk. So basically, like, if you have, you know, an office downtown New York City, you're going to rank in that area. So if you move to Bronx, yes, your ranking is now going to be in Bronx, not in Manhattan anymore. So just know that wherever your office is where your listing is going to rank for a radius. But you don't see like this penalization or like drop from moving. You're just ranking somewhere else now. So it's improved a lot. What I would be really wary of and careful is that there's this thing called the filter that I feel like is very commonly misunderstood. Like a lot of people don't get how it works. So I've written this blog article that details it out, I think as best as I can. But essentially, if you are in a building or you're across the street from other lawyers that practice the same type of law as you do, exactly, you can get filtered. And that's a big problem.
My next question.
I like sometimes tell people to move because the building they're in is like cluttered with tons of other lawyers that do the same type of law, and they're suffering as a result.
I think I could literally have a consulting business just on that issue. Cause it's like, it's not other than geeks like you and me, nobody talks about it. This filter, one type of law per building, people like it's the building. I literally had a call from Jim Hacking, who's trying to get a place, and he has an office that he was looking at across the street from the immigration office. I'm like, that's great. Except there's seven guys in that building already. And it sucks. I know they'll Google out a method to its madness. Have you seen any, you know, we've had a little bit of luck of putting the pin on the edge of the building. Have you seen any luck at breaking into a building that has somebody doing the same type of law? So that if there is somebody upstream of you marketing wise, is there a solution other than moving?
Not a good one. So like the case that I'm really working on right now, there was a guy, he's in the same building as like, I don't know, six or seven other personal injury lawyers, and he was doing good. And then one of his competitors decided to start keyword stuffing in his listing, and it basically knocked this guy down like 10 positions. So we're trying to get the other guys, you know, keyword stuffing removed, but while that's going on, it's like crappy. So I did tell him, you know, it wouldn't be a horrible idea to look at other offices because his lease was coming up anyways, because it's just this ongoing battle and it's irritating.
I think that, I mean, we could do it by hand, but I always feel like the next piece of software is going to be like, am I safe? You know, can I sign a lease? And I get at least three calls a month from people, clients, non-clients. I'm just known for this now because the filter is so frustrating. And if it's wrong, it's bad. Do you see that? That's one of those things where, again, I don't have any inner knowledge, but I know there was a method to their madness. Is that something that you see loosening up at any point? Have you heard any chatter?
I don't, because I think the reason why it's such a problem for lawyers, it's like a very specific industry, right? So when Google makes these changes, they don't do it by industry. So for most industries, it actually makes sense. You know, if I'm looking for a chiropractor and I'm searching in a given area, I don't necessarily want like three chiropractors in the same building. Like maybe I want one that's like closer to my house or, you know, in another part of town. Or the same with a restaurant, right? Like you don't necessarily want all three clustered together. That's what Google's mentality is.
But if you're looking for Italian and this happens to be Little Italy, like, you know, again, they're usually not in the same building. Usually restaurants aren't in the same building. So yeah, it doesn't hit you the same way. But a chiropractor, if this is the medical office, I don't know if, you know, in my immediate area, each area has one or two medical buildings that are the go-to places because you can knock out your appointments at once. And it's not like there's one of that type in that complex. Again, we're sort of discussing this utter frustration. Are there any things, if you were a gambling woman, what do you think for 2021? What tweaks of this local algorithm would you expect? We can talk about bells and whistles, but specifically dealing with spam and filtering, are there any things that, you know, for the people playing this game of local search in the legal space, are there any things that we should expect to see in 2021 or, you know, more likely than not?
Yeah. So if I did think any changes are needed or, you know, in talks, I would say the keyword thing, definitely Google's aware of it for sure. So what they're doing, you know, is up to them, but they're definitely aware of it. So that's hopefully something, you know, we will see get downplayed. And I say hopefully because it's been a while since, you know, it was first brought up. So I'm not really sure how long these things take. And the second thing I would see, I think given the landscape of things right now with COVID, I could see them dialing back proximity a bit. So like, you know, how close a business is to your physical location right now is pretty big. It's a big factor. I could see them scaling that back a bit, especially with like a lot of businesses working from home and like the lack of traveling and stuff like that. I could see that making sense. So,
you know, and I would give you the irony of the whack-a-mole game they play with Regis offices is that in the major markets, the offices are closed. So there is like, it's all amorphous. I've always said that, like when I first started, Virginia didn't allow virtual offices as a bar association, as a bar, right? So that was their thing. And there was so much pushback because the reality of how people practice has changed. So the irony now that many of the largest firms, the mega firms downtown, not the little guys we deal with for local search, but like the mega firms, nobody's in the office. Where is a lawyer? There are bar rules about where you're sitting and practicing. All of that goes out the window. What are you going to like? You're living in the suburbs of Virginia, but you're a DC barred lawyer. I mean, that in the non-COVID times would be a bar violation. So It's just interesting to see that like all these rules have been set up against virtual offices, but we're all virtual now. I'll get off my soapbox. Of all the different bells and whistles that we're seeing in the Google My Business, whether it be hours, posts, messaging, you know, we always say, hey, if Google's putting it out there, take advantage, because you know, you never know when it's going to be a ranking factor, that Google wants more time on site. What do you like, which are the ones that you'd say, hey, I recommend people pushing more resources and time to, and which ones you're like, yeah, they put it out there, but this might be the next Google Plus, and you may not want to spend as much time focused on updating and curating?
Yeah, so I actually did a whiteboard Friday recently at Moz that talks about like the four signals inside the dashboard that actually influence ranking. So those are the four I would always go to, but the business name, which I realize you can't do a lot with, categories is a big one. So you might think like, okay, categories, no, but you get it.
I'll tell you, I don't want to cut you off, but I'm going to give you a story that's going to prove your point. Okay. I woke up one morning we have some certain rankings that have been number one for 10 years. We've done everything right. They're, you know, great lawyers. One day it's gone out of the three pack. Like what the hell? Somebody had gone in and changed the category. That was it. We put it back. Mm-hmm. Boom, we were fine. But the idea that is so, I am proving your point. Yes, it is. If you are not keeping an eye on categories, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah. And they are really, lately anyways, expanding categories. So they've been adding a lot. So we actually did see a new category for lawyers a few months ago called medical lawyer. So that's something to kind of be aware of. Like, you know, depending on what types of cases you do, I would expect that there will be more categories added for some of the niche kind of areas. And we're about to launch a resource on our site very soon that's going to actually list all the changes. So if you're not sure, because it's a lot to track, but every month I check them and add new ones or ones that got removed or updated. So we're going to be publishing that on our site soon.
When you talk about those, if somebody does, let's say, medical malpractice, but it's not their only area. Now, obviously, if you do only that, it's awesome for you. What are your feelings on the subcategories? Would common sense would dictate they're going to go to somebody in that specific niche if it's available? How do you, you know, I've heard some philosophies of like, hey, don't have one category per place. Don't mess around with it. Be very clear about what you do. What's your philosophy about using the subcategories?
So if you have more than one type of category that really applies to you, this is where practitioner listings are really handy. So if you've got six lawyers at your firm, creating a profile for each of them, each having a different category on them, and then you can kind of spread it out, rank really well. That's like by far the best strategy. But if you're like, okay, it's just a single lawyer and this is the firm listing or whatever. Again, you could have two. You can have a lawyer for Seth and you can have a lawyer for the firm. But let's just say you still have tons of categories. I would add secondary categories. Like there's nothing wrong with having like six or seven categories on a listing. Just know that the first one carries way more ranking weight. Right. Another disclaimer, we are seeing right now, and I don't know if lawyers fall into the categories that would have this happen, but if you're in a sensitive category, let's like very spammy, I've seen businesses this week that have been suspended by simply adding a category, which is nuts. Like, it shouldn't be this sensitive. Well,
is that because you added a category, or is that just the issue that we're seeing across the board with any changes? We've seen changes where people have added hours. So it's the problem is we don't know, is it sensitive to the categories, or is it just like right now, if you make any change, a spelling change, like it's crazy. We're seeing, it's crazy. And again, resources, it gets old. Like, you got billions of dollars, like, figure it out. With that, the practitioner profile, what is your thought? But, you know, the downside of that is then you need reviews for that practitioner profile. So, okay, great. You get yourself showing for something, but then you have no meaningful reviews. Do you have, at any level, do you think there is an issue? So you have your primary and now you have your secondary. Is there ever a point where Google gets confused? On the SEO side, we're so leery about having anything that confuses Google. Part of me feels like when you're number one for something, you get a lot of good stuff. Do you want to have that second bite at the apple and possibly, you know, bifurcate your juice? What's your feeling there?
And so you would only want another profile that's something you're not already targeting, right? So if you have your firm set up for personal injury lawyer, then no, it doesn't make any sense to create a practitioner listing also targeting personal injury lawyer.
Understood. Like, but what about medical, which comes up under personal injury? It's now a sub, like that's where it gets sticky to me.
Mm-hmm. So if you're already ranking for medical malpractice terms and you're ranking really well, then probably not. But if you're not ranking well, then I would definitely give it a shot. So it's always case by case.
Like, depends on the day, right? How many spammers are in your way? Okay, so you were going through the four signals. We had name, we had categories.
Right, reviews were the other one, which we already talked about. And then the website field. So this is another one that actually we have a blog about, and we used a lawyer example, a personal injury lawyer. So if you've got multiple listings for, let's say you have five lawyers, and one of them you really want to rank well for train accidents and one for construction accidents, you could actually have the one lawyer in the website field linking to like your train accident page on your website that's all optimized for train queries. And then your other lawyer going to like a construction accident page. It seems a little weird because normally you'd put it to their bio, but you could also just update their bio to optimize it for those types of cases.
You're saying, but this is from the GMB?
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk me through this a little bit?
Yeah. So let's say, for example, Seth, you have a listing and your firm's already ranking really well for general car accident terms. So great. We're not going to touch that. But you guys don't rank really well, let's say, for bicycle accident terms.
Okay, perfect.
So this would be a great opportunity to create, you know, a listing for yourself. Maybe use the category lawyer, or you could also see how it works for personal injury lawyer. But specifically in the website field, instead of going to the homepage of your site, you would go to the bicycle accident page instead.
As a practitioner. And then would you build a practitioner profile around bicycle accidents?
Pretty much. Like, I mean, again, you can't throw it in your title unless you want to break Google's guidelines, but I've seen this done really well in certain markets. You will find some attorneys have like what I call one boxes, but essentially you type in like bicycle accident lawyer and they're the only one. And it's because they've done a fabulous job of making themselves look like the bicycle accident expert.
Understood. But again, starting reviews from scratch. And goes back to my fear that there's not a subcategory for bicycle accidents, is there?
No.
So now you're fighting that. That goes back to my original question, because now you're fighting the original juice. Again, you don't get anywhere unless you take risks. At the same time, if you're doing really well across the board and you're coming for bicycle accidents, it'd be great to have stuff that lets you know that somebody's a specialist in it. At the same time, it seems that like everything in some of the bigger markets, people take bigger risks, but do you think that there is risk, meaningful risk there, putting somebody as a second personal injury lawyer within the firm instead of going to bio, going? So are you an advocate for practitioner profiles under the same category if a firm is ranking?
No, not if the firm's ranking. So this would be like, in my scenario, you're not ranking for bicycle accident.
Okay, so they don't come up for personal injury. So instead, you create a practitioner profile that's not the firm profile for John Smith, that instead of going to the homepage, is going to the bicycle accident page. And in, let's say, Atlanta, massively competitive market, you might have a shot there.
Right. And this is where it really only works for niche terms, right? And you got to look at who you're competing with. Like, because you said you're coming in with zero reviews. So if you're competing with people that have like 500 reviews, it's debatable on how much traffic you're going to get. But something else to keep in mind is like when you're asking people to review you, there is nothing wrong with somebody reviewing both the practitioner and the law firm. So,
well, let me ask, so this great point. I'm going to pop into this for a second. We talked about reviews, but something that I have seen anecdotally is that somebody with multiple offices, if somebody I saw one friend that had, let's say, five offices, legitimate offices, and somebody went and reviewed all five, boom, hit a filter, came down. People do two, seems to be okay. Is there a magic number within a firm's ecosystem that you think is safe? I mean, I always tell people, don't get greedy and you'll be fine. Yeah. That line moves, but what's your thought on that?
Yeah, well, definitely. Like, it's unnatural for somebody to leave reviews for five different places, but leaving reviews for multiple offices is technically not allowed. So, because they're not, like, there's no way that somebody actually was a customer of two different offices. I don't think
that's actually, factually, that's like, that could happen easily. You have people, resources, especially now, like, you have people, you know, paralegals are in one office, lawyers are in another. You could easily review two Jiffy Lubes. I mean, again, I feel like I'm back to my Mike Blumenthal days of what is just and what is not. Putting that aside for a second, like, there are certain realities where it does make sense, but certainly, a law firm and practitioner profile, that would be more natural, I guess.
Right? That's always fine. That's actually fine. Not against policy at all. What you're describing, it's gray, right? So it depends on what Google support rep you get. I've had some people say it's okay. Definitely okay for like McDonald's. Like, it's typical, you know, you go to different McDonald's locations, but for professional services, usually it's like, okay, you didn't work with all five of these offices.
No. That's what I'm saying. They're definitely not five, but when you have two, that to me, like, it's rule of reason. Like, it's like, that would not be insane. That said, it goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the Regis, is do you want to defend the fact it's a Regis office, or would you rather just not have to deal with the issue at all?
And yeah, so I would.
Let me ask you one more, which again, there's no magic answer, but law firm and two practitioners, is that legitimate, or does that start to push it?
You can have as many, like, so
a person reviewing multiple.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Again, like, if you have two different lawyers that are working on the case and the reviews are saying, you know, Joe helped me, but also Amy helped me, and the reviews are clear about that, then I think it's fine. Because again, Google doesn't know the facts per se, but
understood. Like, and frankly, they don't seem to care. Period. You have people. One case that I think that it was even shown to your guys. You know, somebody in one market was going to a state fair and handing out prizes for reviews where people. And the guy said, "I have never been to this firm, but I wanted to get the baseball cap." And, you know, and that didn't pass. A human at Google said, "Yeah, we're okay with that." And so it's, you know, craziness. So look, this is as good a representation of this on reviews. What is your take right now? They're giving us little buttons, good and bad, of words, so that the person doesn't just leave stars and leaves, but gives some, which is very, really cool. Are you seeing the words in the reviews as a major ranking factor, or how are they using the words in the reviews?
I haven't seen it as a major ranking factor. Now, that being said, Mike Blumenthal did do a study, I think it was 2 years ago, showing how reviews on Yelp actually influenced ranking on Google. So the text of the review. So he actually did an experiment where he had a bunch of his friends leave a review for a bar using specific words.
Not a jewelry store?
No, it was a bar. I know. So he had them use specific words in the Yelp review, and then the listing started ranking on Google for those words. So I think that it's definitely true, like, offsite, and we see this all the time with, like, even content on websites, you know, impact stuff. So I do think that Google is using content, but I haven't seen enough evidence really with Google reviews to say that they use it a lot with their own reviews.
Gotcha. So look, in our remaining moments here, any sort of advice to people who are, I mean, look, this is as great a sort of, you know, a conversation as far as you've gotten to the heart of, like, what's there, what you can do, what you can't do. What is your advice to people who are sort of fighting that uphill battle? You know, who, you know, they get, like, let's take the classic example for bad reviews. You go through your normal process, you know, any advice to business owners who are trying to do things right, but having to deal with the public and spammers and all these other things, what do you have to say?
It's just a matter of regularly monitoring it. Like, you know, if you're not hiring an SEO company, monitoring yourself or you know, however you want to do that, but you got to, it keeps changing. Like, the moment you take your eyes off it for a few weeks, there might be something different. So it's not one of those things you can kind of set and forget, which I don't think a lot of people understand. And so that's, you know, just a matter of like making sure that you have somebody that's regular, check the listing, the search results, see what your competitors are up to, because that changes quite frequently too. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to like plug my agency too much, but like we have a newsletter that's completely free that will, like, if you're not familiar with what's going on in the industry, we have all kinds of stuff like, hey, here's what Google's doing this week. This came out, that came out. So, you know, Sterling Skies newsletter can help you at least keep on track, but you need somebody.
I'm a huge, huge Sterling. you're a fan, Sterling Sky fan. It is, you guys are just amazing. Final thing for the audience. Favorite softwares for local. What are your, give me two or three softwares. We just did, we're going to be talking to the local Viking guys on an upcoming show. What do you love these days?
So Places Scout is probably the highest on my list for the one I use most often. It does not have a small learning curve though. So when you first use it, it's like, whoa, there's a lot of stuff in here. But as a marketer, I love it because of how much stuff is in there. So I'm kind of like sold on that one. I'd say Bright Local is another one that's like a lot easier to use. They I think are going to be launching some new features that sound really exciting. White Spark as well. I throw them in the mix. They have some really cool tools as well.
You know, another final question. When, you know, some of the things we talk about is when people start out, they may look at the Moz product or the Yext product. And as they get more advanced, they might go Bright Local or White Spark. Do you have feelings on that? Is there a point, when should somebody be making that jump?
So funny that you mentioned Yext. I actually have a study that I'll be presenting on next year, but I actually think there may be a use case to use Yext as a lawyer.
Say that again.
I think there may actually be a use case to use Yext as a lawyer, which I never thought I'd say in a million years.
Explain.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're not gonna let that one sit, huh? So basically it's like, you know, $500-$600 a year. It depends on what access level you have. So it's annoying that it's that cost. But the positive thing about Yext is that they have an exclusive, I believe, deal with Yahoo. So it is really hard to get your Yahoo listings updated and optimized without using Yext, like very hard. So we actually tracked over 6 months, the number of leads that came in from Yext for a personal injury lawyer. They're in a big city, but we actually found that through Yahoo, you know, over the course of 6 months, it resulted in a handful of leads, not a lot, but a handful. So if any of those were to turn into cases, you know, you can see where I'm going here. It might justify the couple hundred a year or whatever that it costs.
It's so funny you say that on a personal level. You know, back in the day, Yahoo was everything. Even not even when Google was there, a Yahoo directory and getting into those elite places, you know, that was a huge deal. So, and did they control DMOs back in the day? I can't remember, but
it was Google.
It was Google. Yeah. So, with the Yahoo directory was extremely, it was the most powerful local ranking factor back in the day. And I just got somebody, one of my SEO team saying, hey, we just had something. Can you please approve it? Like, we're going back. And I wonder if that's because we've been focused so much on Bright Local and have moved away from Yext as we've grown, but I will go back and check that out and find out, hey, there may be a cost-effective solution for that one widget, even if you don't want to use Yext as your main thing. And maybe, hey, if this is your way to Yahoo and the cost is cost-effective to get the Yahoo directory going, just so sad to see what was once a legitimate competitor is really just a ghost land now.
Yeah, which still brings in some traffic though. That's the thing, right? Like, it's the numbers were not high. Let me be clear. Like, over a 6 month period, you know, it resulted in, I don't know, something like 60 visits, and like out of those was like 5 or 6 leads. So still, like,
but the PI space, and then look, that's where, you know, in the PI space, leads could be worth $300 or more a lead. You know,
exactly.
All of a sudden, you're like, but you also, you know, with what they're charging either per month or per year. Very, very amazing stuff. Thank you so much. You know, great to watch your journey. Proud to see I'm the first non-related client to Sterling Sky, and I take that badge of honor very proudly. and thank you so much. Can't wait to read this upcoming report of yours, and hope we get to connect in person sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Share the same feeling.
Very good. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.